Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm here with James Corbett, and I've just watched his interview with Whitney Webb on his YouTube channel. Phenomenal deep dive on the intelligence agency side of the Epstein story. Today, the subject is unmasking Epstein. And if you want to support James's important work, I've got his links for his YouTube, Substack, Twitter, BitChute, Insta. All of his socials are in the description box below this video. If you're watching in the live stream presently, I'll put his YouTube link so you can give him a sub over in the live chat. Definitely check out that Whitney Webb interview. She's a phenomenal researcher. Huge thank you for coming on, James.
Well, thank you for having me. And I will just put the caveat up front for people who didn't realize that YouTube post was actually a repost of an interview that I did almost 3 years ago with her, I think, at this point. Because, as people may or may not know, I was censored off of YouTube for a good few years. So every Sunday I've been taking to putting flashbacks from the last few years that people on YouTube didn't get to see because I got my channel back somehow. So I'm starting to repopulate my channel with some of those old works. So I decided this week, because of all the Epstein news, I think it would be good to revisit my interview with Whitney Webb. As you say, she is an encyclopedia of knowledge on the subject, wrote the thick 900-page, two-volume book, One Nation Under Blackmail, that I hope everyone who's interested in the subject reads. So I couldn't possibly do justice to that level of detail. It's an absolutely mind-bogglingly dense work. But anyway, people who are really interested in the deep dive should definitely go there.
Yeah, and credit to you then for losing your channel. I've lost mine twice. And it basically, it's a badge of honor. It means you're over the target. Yeah. And they don't want that information out there.
Yeah, what did I do to get it back? That's what I'm worried about. Uh-oh.
don't worry, David, he got his back recently as well. So
weird.
Yeah. So what got you into the Epstein story in the first place?
You know, that's a good question. When exactly did I get into Epstein, or at least aware of the story? I remember I had an episode, I think it was number 302 off the top of my head, but people can check that out on my website. It was called Political Pedophilia, and it was about various stories. And I definitely covered the Epstein story as one of the stories in that episode. So I've definitely been onto the case for at least a decade now. And I can't remember exactly when or where or how I first discovered it. But I believe, if memory serves, 2015 was when the pictures of Prince Andrew with Virginia Giuffre and Ghislaine Maxwell first got leaked. And I think that brought some new attention to the case at that time.
So what was it, you know, that attracted you to research and expose these people then for 10 years?
Yes, I you cut out for a second there, but I'm going to assume what got me interested in pursuing this story? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, he's for staying with it for 10 years. What did you find, you know, so intriguing about it?
Exactly what I think everyone finds so intriguing about it, and what I covered in my recent episode on Donald and Jeffrey's wonderful secret. For people who haven't seen that, I ended that episode exploration of all of the various Epstein / Trump connections with the an article that was written by a very mainstream source. I can't remember which website it was that published it, but a very mainstream source that said essentially conspiracy theorists are right and Eyes Wide Shut is a real thing. And I think that is one of the things that's just endlessly intriguing about this story, is that imagine even 10 years ago when I was first starting to talk about this, it was absolute pie in the sky lunacy that anyone could suggest that there were these type of political pedophilia rings operating at the highest levels of political and economic power. That's total bark raving, absolute lunacy. And now it's absolutely 100% true. Yeah, it looks like the conspiracy theorists were right. So I think for anyone who has been a conspiracy realist for any length of time, interested in these subjects, if you want to know how power really operates at the highest levels, This is definitely a part of it, or it has been a significant part of it for a long time. Now, people like Whitney Webb and others have made, I think, the important point that maybe one of the reasons why the Epstein op was rounded up and ultimately eliminated is because they don't really need that level of intelligence operating anymore when everyone is connected to these spy surveillance data harvesting devices at all times, feeding it all of their personal information, now you don't really need to do intelligence and spying and blackmailing in the way that you used to. Now it is mostly digital and electronic, which is exactly why we see the rise of things like Palantir at this time. As Epstein goes down, Palantir suddenly becomes ascendant in the oligarchy.
So why do you think then Epstein got a pass the first time he was arrested, but the second time he got arrested, they unalived him?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. And obviously above my pay grade to be able to answer it with certainty, I can only speculate. But what I would say is clearly what we know about that first arrest is that every higher up, as it went higher up in the authority chain, everyone was trying to put the brakes on it and trying to cover it up, trying to suppress that story rather than to get it out. And of course, that ultimately got to the point where Alex Acosta managed to essentially give Epstein the sweetheart plea deal. He'd get the slap on the wrist, the one charge. He'd spend it in club fed and be out and with the wrist slap, essentially. I think that was a case where genuinely that story was, there were people who went to the police. There was people at the lower levels in Miami who were actually taking it seriously, and they started to escalate it, and then it got covered up. And I think that the people who were running that op thought, well, that, you know, that'll do. They've covered it up. We've given him the wrist slap. He can continue on. Or at least that's certainly the way that he attempted to do it. By the time things started catching up after it really went mega viral a decade later, I think, you know, everyone realized that the jig was up and it got rounded up. But, you know, it is actually instructive also in that sense, because I think it's another window into the fact that we often point in the conspiracy realist space, we point at the mainstream people who laugh, oh, you think there's a conspiracy that happens? Oh, you're crazy. And we laugh at that mindset. But I think the sort of mirror image of that mindset is that literally everything that ever happens is planned in advance and is part of the grand conspiracy, and nothing can ever happen that goes against that. Well, no, I think people, for example, genuine, well-meaning police officers at the lowest level who have no idea about this grand international intelligence op may actually get a case and start investigating it and drag someone in and realize that there's something going on and escalate it up the chain of command before it gets squelched. And that can have actual real-world effects. I don't think everything that ever happens in the entire world is planned in advance. If I did, I wouldn't be doing this work, because there'd be no hope, and I guess we should just all go and wait for our eventual enslavement.
Yeah, Joseph Ricari in the Florida Police Department, he was pushing, and he ended up dead, and John Mark Duggan ended up fleeing to Russia. So I've written a book on this, Who Killed Epstein, right. Prince Andrew or Bill Clinton.
Good, yeah.
And do you think Prince Andrew or Bill Clinton would have been in a conspiracy to get rid of Jeffrey?
They both certainly have ample reason to be. I would be interested to hear the specific evidence of what specifically went down, and I haven't researched it to that level, so I would be interested to hear your take on it. But yeah, I mean, obviously, as potential suspects, absolutely, I wouldn't exonerate either of them before investigation.
So you've got Bill Clinton scheduled to testify about Epstein in December 17th and Hillary on December 18th.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen there?
I absolutely could not tell you what will or will not happen. See, this is, I mean, again, how could anyone who is interested in how power really operates not be absolutely fascinated with the way this story is playing out? Because something that I think has become something of a well-known cliche, even in the conspiracy realist space, is that, yes, there are factions that, you know, fight with each other for control and are competing against each other. But there are those nuclear issues that you would not go anywhere near, because you know that would threaten the whole game, the whole system. This is one of those issues. And it's really a question. Do we really think that they're going to pull out the photographic evidence of Bill Clinton raping minors or whatever they may or may not be in those archives? Do we really think they're going to actually reveal this? I don't know. I have no idea. But I am not holding my breath for that type of revelation. But the question is, how do you suppress it at this point? Because it does seem like a Mexican standoff with all these different sides that are threatening to go nuclear with this issue. So I don't know. Could we actually see something, some sort of major event happen? Well, it's certainly a possibility. Of course, there's the other possibility, which is 2019, Epstein finally gets caught and goes to jail and the suicide and all that. But what happens directly after that, we get the whole scamdemic everything. I'm not saying that the whole COVID scamdemic was simply a distraction from what had gone on before, but the timing on that is of interest at the very least. So again, if things go really nuclear with this type of whatever is going to come out or not come out in the coming days or weeks, could something else be not far behind to take the public's minds off this issue?
So we've got a few of the more conspiratorial viewers in the chat are asking whether you think there is the possibility that Jeffrey is still alive.
Is it a possibility? Yes, I wouldn't rule it out. But do I have any reason for concretely believing that? No, I don't. And I understand. Here's the thing that I don't understand is that I don't understand how people think that an oligarchy that would ruthlessly kill, for example, thousands of their own citizens on 9/11 in order to justify going off and killing millions of people around the world in a war of terror and all of this and have absolutely no compunction, probably would slit their own grandmother's throat for power. They'd never kill Epstein. No. Why would they do that? Yeah, no, of course they would. They would do it in a second if they, for example, wanted to preserve this game for all the marbles. So is it a possibility? Sure. But until I see some concrete evidence for that, I don't think he's just living somewhere else and he could be discovered any minute and bring the entire House of Cards down just because somebody, spotted him somewhere or something. It stretches my credulity to believe that.
So viewers, I'm live with James Corbett. All of his links are in the description box. Please support his channel. He's just had a fantastic upload of a Whitney Webb interview, which is phenomenal. And I'll put the link in the live chat as well. If you've got any questions while we're live, we've got about another 15 minutes or so. Please put them in the chat. So, of course, we saw all of the current administration, Trump, Bondi, etc., campaign on releasing the Epstein files. And then they did this huge U-turn. I mean, what do you make of that?
Again, yeah, it's mind-boggling because you would think that how could they not have known that this was going to happen? Especially because, again, this isn't Trump's first rodeo. It's his second. So he should know what is and what isn't in those files. And, and I think he was giving hints of that. For example, in my recent podcast episode, I played the clip of him from 2024 when he was still candidate Trump, directly asked, would you release the Epstein files? Yeah, well, we'd have to take a look at them. There's a lot of fake folks, phony stuff. You don't want to hurt anybody with some of that phony stuff in that world. But, maybe I'd do it. He was definitely prevaricating because I think he knows that there's some uncomfortable information in there. But yeah, people like Bondi, Kash Patel, others who are playing this game, clearly they... I guess they truly did not know what they were stepping into and are way over their heads. And once they realized that they cannot actually release this information because it is the nuclear issue, I think they had to just absolutely backtrack and, speculate away as to, the old Bill Hicks joke when they roll in the new administration and they show, the Kennedy assassination from some angle that nobody's ever seen before and say, any questions? Only what are my orders, sir? Some version of that may have played out with Bondi and Patel and people like that.
So what factors would you say are most important to them in protecting the files? Would it be the interests of national security exposing intelligence agencies such as the CIA, Mossad, honeytrap operations? Or would it be protecting the donor class because the donor class is in the files and, they've all been compromised by Jeffrey and it doesn't matter which political party wins. Yeah. These donors are behind both of them. So both parties are going to keep protecting them. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that would be an either or. I think both of those factors would definitely play into it. I would suspect if these people are concerned for their own personal safety, I would say that they should probably be concerned about, the whatever photographic or video evidence that may exist of some of these acts with some of these politicians, these powerful politicians and financiers, etc., who presumably would kill to keep those things secret. So I think that would definitely play into it. But yes, on the grander scheme of things, again, this is one of those House of Cards moments where this could be the card that literally causes everything tumbling down if it is revealed the extent to which blackmail has been functioning at the highest levels with these intelligence deep state operations behind the scenes, and what that really reveals about the way power is actually operating. Hint, it doesn't matter who's in the Oval Office if that person is being blackmailed through, you know, operations like this.
Goldie wants to know, how can Patel and Bondi sleep at night?
That's a very good question, and I couldn't answer it. You know, actually, a potential answer may come from a recent documentary I just put out about Descent into Madness, where I looked at the idea of pathocracy, as in rule by literal psychopaths and sociopaths. And I don't know how you would be able to sleep with yourself at that, looking into people's eyes and just lying to them boldly like that. On that level, unless you are sociopathic or something along that spectrum.
I don't think they care, Goldie. All they care about is themselves, and they will lie to our faces and just say whatever they want, whichever way the wind is blowing. They're all careerist, egomaniac psychopaths. So the other slap in the face, especially to the survivors, was this sit down with Ghislaine Maxwell, when the survivors have been snubbed and not listened to. And I've just finished reading Virginia's book. If Virginia was alive, and I corresponded with her on X, going back 5-6 years now, if she was alive today, she would be absolutely up in arms over Maxwell being transferred to a soft prison and getting the way pay for an early release. I mean, how blatant is it? You've got the poster child for human trafficking getting rewarded by an administration that said they were going to go after the traffickers. It's just so in our faces.
It's so absolutely blood-curdlingly maddening. And I think the thing that to me is the most galling, it isn't even that Maxwell, of course she would, whatever, she'll sing for her supper, do whatever in order to get out and get pardoned. And of course Trump is, and the Trump administration is going to play that game. Oh, just say Trump didn't do anything and we'll put you in Club Fed. I understand their motivations and why they're doing what they're doing. What I cannot understand and cannot countenance are the people who continue to give Trump some sort of pass on all of this stuff. No, he is participating, actively participating in the cover-up of Epstein and literally calling you stupid for believing in this hoax. I mean, at what level do people have to be told to their face that they're an idiot, they're stupid? What level do they have to listen to this lying before they will actually give up on this cult of personality that they're caught up in?
So you suggested earlier that perhaps the administration are being leaned on. Did you mean by that perhaps Trump has been threatened personally?
It's certainly a possibility. Hey, I mean, remember that golden pager that Netanyahu gave Trump earlier this year? What does that mean after the pager incident? You know, what is that other than a threat? But I mean, even more seriously than that, who knows what is going on behind the scenes? But I think anyone in that position with their head screwed on straight, even if they weren't personally involved in this, would know that revealing secrets like that about people at that level of power would be dangerous to their well-being, shall we say. So, I would assume, given the extent to which we can say this was a deep state operation of some sort, which I think seems a fairly safe statement to make at this point, that means there are going to be incredibly powerful people who want those secrets covered up. And the question is, what would you do in that situation and how would you reveal the truth? I would say, open the absolute floodgates on everything, because one of the things that I have learned in my studies on this over the years, I, for example, have done a Requiem for the Suicided series looking at various people, various whistleblowers, Terence Yakey and Gary Webb and going to forget his name, Harrow Down Hill, David Kelly, et cetera, et cetera. I've looked at various instances of people being suicided for revealing or having information on dangerous subjects like this. And one thing that comes up over and over and over is that essentially they had information but they weren't revealing it, or they were about to reveal it, or they telegraphed in advance that they had this information and they didn't reveal it. Danny Casolaro and others. And then they end up dead. And suddenly all their papers are missing, and who knows what they were on, you know, what subject they had uncovered. And I think, so the one thing that I've learned is at the point at which you have incredibly important information like that, absolutely open the floodgates on it, because at that point, you know, killing you wouldn't actually accomplish anything.
Yeah, I've written about Gary Webb as well. Absolutely fascinating story.
Yeah.
And going back to, you know, threats on people then, let's have a look at Virginia more closely, because Lady Colin Campbell put out a video a couple of weeks ago saying that she had sources telling her from overseas that because the prime minister was documented in the book as a guy who was getting aroused from choking her and causing such serious injuries, you know, she was injured for days afterwards, and she went to Jeffrey and said, this is what's happened. And he said, it's part of the job, get on with it. Anyway, Lady Colin Campbell said that because, you know, most researchers would assume that is Ehud Barak, she believes that Israeli intelligence unalived Virginia in a way that it would just make it look like, you know, she'd done it to herself, like pharmacided her. What do you think about a theory like that? Because the other thing that she added was that the media had been lined up to focus mostly on Prince Andrew, which we did see. It was all Prince Andrew headlines here in the UK. And, you know, Barak wouldn't be mentioned in the mainstream. He wasn't mentioned in the mainstream here at all. So what do you think about that theory and the role of Israel in this?
Yeah, it's absolutely, I mean, there's no doubt that Ehud Barak was in the Black Book and was absolutely visiting Epstein on numerous occasions, etc., neck deep in whatever was going on with that operation. So it, you know, again, that Mossad and Israel would have some hand in covering up what's going on would not surprise me in the least. Whether or not they had a hand in what happened to Virginia, I have no data on that either way. I haven't seen any specific evidence about that. That's such a bizarre story. She ends up in the hospital because of some kind of car accident, ? But the doctor said she had 4 days to live, and then she got out, and then she seemed like she was recovering and fine, and then suddenly she's dead. A bizarre story. But having said that, I did talk in the immediate wake of that death to the researcher whose name is completely escaping my memory, wrote numerous books on this subject and related subjects, Franklin Scandal.
Nick Bryant.
Nick Bryant. I talked to Nick Bryant immediately after that. And for what it's worth, he thinks that that story probably was her doing that to herself. He talks about the situation she was in with her husband and all of that craziness and the abuse and whatever was going on with regards to that. So, I have no data on this. I wasn't personally in touch with her. I didn't know her. I know that she did tweet in 2019 or whatever it was, that if anything happens to me, know that I didn't do it myself. So that, you know, that has to at least be one data point on the table, but I don't know the specifics in any great detail about the autopsy or what that may or may not have revealed, etc. So I can't really opine on it.
Yeah, viewers, if you've not read Nobody's Girl yet, I would urge you to do so. I listened to the audiobook and the horror of what she went through before Epstein. I mean, the stuff she alleged about her own father and his mate, this guy called Uncle Forrest, absolutely disgusting. Made me sick to my stomach. All right, so Ian wants to know, do you think the alleged settlement payment ever reached Virginia's account? Well, there was various settlements, wasn't there? Going back to Maxwell, more recently Prince Andrew.
Yeah. I have no idea. Did she claim that it didn't? I don't know.
supposedly, she set up a charity, didn't she, to help survivors?
Yeah, she was involved with various charity work, yeah.
I think a lot of it went into that. Well, thanks for your questions, folks. Keep them coming. So Robbie wants to know, why is it all high-profile Brits being named? And I think he's alluding to Prince Andrew there especially. While Clinton... there's not a mention. I say it shows us how much power Clinton has. What's James's thoughts on that?
It's a good question. I think Yes, maybe. But I assume that the reason, for example, and the only high-level Brit that I know who gets mentioned often is Prince Andrew, right? If there are others that get mentioned in connection with Epstein, please let me know. But it seems to be Prince Andrew. And I would say that's because there is such the mountain of evidence, including, of course, the famous photograph of him with Virginia, which is just, I mean, obviously inescapable. Whereas we don't have that kind of image locked in people's minds with regards to Clinton. I do see Clinton's name raised in connection with Epstein a lot, but maybe that just speaks to the types of, you know, independent news sources I'm looking at. I'm sure, you know, the mainstream news probably isn't covering it in the same way. But having said that, I don't think he's being excluded from this conversation. And obviously, I think now Trump is trying to pivot towards that. It's about the Clintons. It's a Democrat operation. That's what it was about, guys.
Yeah, Keir Starmer had his buddy Peter Mandelson ready to welcome Trump with open arms when he came to the UK recently. But then it all got leaked about Mandelson here, which blew up, and he lost his position. He was, I don't know if you read the Mandelson communications, but he was gushing, absolutely gushing, how much he loved Jeffrey after his conviction. It was, disgusting.
Interesting.
Yeah, all right. So next question is then, why do you think Maxwell was moved? What leverage do you think she really has?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Do I read it in that sense? Do I think it's her leverage? Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, maybe she does have access to whatever dead man switch or whatever that could release something, you know, automatically. I suppose that's a possibility. My sense of it is more like she is being paid off to say what she knows without even probably having to be told what she has to say, which is Trump had nothing to do with it. He was good as gold. I never saw him do anything inappropriate. And she knows that that's the golden ticket. So that's my reading on it until I see something otherwise. But is it a possibility that she actually does still have her finger on something that could, you know, leverage this situation? Sure. I mean, hey, she could come out and say, yeah, Trump, I saw Trump with these girls and he absolutely did that. So, you know, the fact that she's not saying that is the way that she's buying her freedom or pardon or whatever she's going to get.
So this landslide vote that they just did then, that only one person voted against it. What are the next steps with that? And do you think it will still get blocked somehow?
Yeah, well, as I covered in my recent episode on this, as some people have pointed out, the poison pill is in the act itself. If people actually go and read the document, in the act, there is a specific clause that talks about immediate release of all unclassified files relating to the Epstein. And that is the poison word, because all they have to do is classify national security. We can't release that document, and it's gone. And at this point, call me cynical, but I think, you know, anything truly incriminating to the system has already been scrubbed. But even the things that survive, they can still hold back at will just by declaring national security. And what can we do about it? There's nothing we can do because we can't even see it, let alone contest its classification. So I think, you know, the act is great, wonderful, but I don't think it's worth the paper it's written on.
So Kazza wants to know, does that mean we get nothing or we get stuff that's heavily redacted?
Oh, we'll get something. I mean, of course, but limited hangout, right? I mean, this is the definition of that. So I would assume that the redactions, I mean, let's put it this way. If they're going to be smart about it, they will throw out some red meat of some real things and some people will go down, but just not, you know, it won't be the full deal. Ultimately, they won't release everything.
So Trump's response then was, I'm going to investigate Clinton, JP Morgan, etc.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Is that just WWF posturing or?
You know, again, it's interesting. I guess it's a question of how much is still there that could possibly be released, that could be that nuclear button. And if that's the case, and if Trump truly feels threatened by what may or may not come out of this, then maybe this is a genuine threat towards those other people, as in, hey, I really could drop the hammer on this. And I don't know. So again, this all revolves around things that we can only speculate about because we do not have access to these files. Or again, even talking about the files as if there are certain files that exist, and that is the sum of this story. But as people, for example, who have read One Nation Under Blackmail, or even just listened to my interview with Whitney on the subject, know it's about much, much, much more than some, you know, magical list. Here's the client list, guys, and that's everything. No, this is a story that goes back decades and involves ultimately as an expanding circle of hundreds and thousands of various conspirators in various ways, financial and otherwise. It's a much, much bigger story than I think most people realize.
So I'm just curious how you think this is going to play out during Trump's term. Then you're saying that we're not going to get much more information. And do you think also Maxwell will get a pardon on his way out?
Yeah. I'd like to say that he couldn't possibly pardon Maxwell, because that would surely be the line, even for the most deeply, you know, flag waving MAGA hat wearing person. No one would possibly give him, the benefit of the doubt on that, right? If he actually pardoned Maxwell. But I can't even rule that out at this stage. Maybe he will. I don't know. Again, it speaks to the incredible nature of this particular type of story, not just Epstein, but this type of story, again, goes to the absolute heart of how the conspiracy functions and how it has drawn so many people into this web and what it could reveal about the way power is really operating. So again, would he do something like pardon Maxwell if he thinks that'll help cover it up and we can sweep it up? Again, I think at this point, given the amount of attention that is on it, they have to throw someone under the bus, or some of the people who have been involved in this will go down as a result of it. But we should always, again, also be aware that in these great melodramatic things that are playing out on the big scale, yes, sometimes big institutions even go down as a result of things like this. But that too can work as part of the power struggle that's taking place within the oligarchy. Like, for example, remember the 2008 financial crisis. I mean, Bear Stearns and others, there were big, big institutions that went down as a result of that. And yeah, certainly some of the players who thought they were at the table getting knifed in the back going, what the hell's what's going on? But that ultimately benefits some of the other players at the table who then get to take a bigger share of the pie afterwards. So can we see that? Who knows? Maybe they'll throw the Clintons to the wolves. Again, I'm not holding my breath on that, but something like that, something that would satisfy the public enough to go, look, yes, we exposed it. It turned out it was all a Democrat hoax, and we got those Democrats who were involved in it. You know, case closed. We don't need to look at, you know, Ehud Barak or people like that. Whatever. Who cares? Move on. I would hope that wouldn't work in this day and age, but it's certainly a game plan that has worked in the past. So will they try it again? Maybe.
We've got a long one here from Shane. When you look at Epstein's global network, what do you believe was its true primary function? Blackmail, intelligence gathering, financial crime, or something deeper? Mm.
You know, again, a good question. And I would struggle to say that there is a primary function in something like this, because again, it doesn't have to be exclusionary. I mean, all of these things go together. So I think they all help each other. I think the blackmail side of it is fascinating in the sense that, again, I think that's the window into how the power is operating and how it is being wielded behind the scenes. But having said that, I Whitney, for example, argues a lot that people are obviously very, very interested in the salacious details of the sexual crimes that took place in the Epstein network. But the financial side of what was going on, the financial crimes, are in some ways just even more mind-boggling when you start to get into it. And that leads you directly into the intelligence operations and the, you know, the drug running networks and the mafia and all of these broader connections. It's everything. It's everything all at once. It's all of these stories that all connect in a nexus like this, which is, again, why I think it's just such a fascinating and horrific, but obviously incredibly important story for us to be looking at. Because again, I think it tells us something fundamental about the real power structure that's operating, that has nothing to do with the soap opera that we see play out on the TV screens with the politicians, you know, pretending to run the world. They do not run the world. And this is our insight into that.
Absolutely. So the Nexus that you just referred to, Ange is wondering, who do you think is really controlling the Nexus?
Yeah. Again, if I could answer that and say who it was, I mean, that isn't that it? And then I could, you know, and that's done. And who can know? I mean, there's so much smokescreen that goes on, and there's so much information about this that we don't know. Clearly, there are intelligence arms in this, and clearly, I would say CIA and Mossad are obviously on the table. But does that talk about the real top of this hierarchy and who's really pulling the strings? I don't know. And I cannot answer that. All we can do at this point is make informed speculation, etc. But again, this, you know, the people who talk about the Council of 13 and the old black nobility and things like this, sure, that could all exist. That could, all of those types of things. I mean, I don't think we have the answer to that, or at least I don't. So I'm sorry to disappoint people on that. But it does actually raise an important question. A question, actually, there are two questions. One is, do we think that it is a singular entity that controls all of this? And that's certainly one way to imagine how an operation like this could work. But I think it would be more likely that there are different factions and different people who have different pieces of this puzzle and different parts of the story, and who are collecting intelligence on each other, even as they're collecting intelligence on their blackmail subjects, etc. So that it is the Mexican standoff. Everyone has a gun pointed at everyone else's head, which is why no one gets shot, metaphorically or literally. So I think that's another way of looking at this. Maybe it is not a singular entity that controls all of this. Maybe it's many people at the table, and that is how the oligarchy functions. It props itself up because there are many people who are invested in this, to the point where if information about this came out, it would utterly, completely ruin their lives at the very least, and devastate, you know, entire society, etc. The other question that this raises, I think, is one that I keep going back to in my work, which is that, of course, people are obsessed with, you know, what is the top of the pyramid? Who is that person or that group? And the implication is always just get rid of that person or that group that controls it all and everything crumbles. But actually, I mean, even as a metaphor, that fails. Because if you take the capstone off the pyramid, the entire pyramid is still in place. It's just now it has this juicy spot open at the very top. And you know there's going to be a million, maybe a billion psychopaths that are going to be scrambling to get into that capstone position and just completely rule over the pyramid. That, of course, why wouldn't they want to do that? So to my mind, it's kind of the wrong concept of what we're trying to do. Yes, okay, it's endlessly fascinating to talk about the top of the pyramid and who's at the top, but it seems to me that the real point of this should be for us to recognize, okay, this is a pyramid. We're at the bottom of this pyramid. We're being crushed. And we're also supporting this pyramid. We're the ones at the bottom that are supporting this entire power structure and everything that's going on in it with our time, our energy, our resources, our livelihoods are being spent in the creation of this vast system that clearly is harming us. Literally physically harming us as well as mentally and everything else. So wouldn't it make more sense for us to go, we're not going to participate in this system anymore. We're going over here and using our time, our energy, our power, our blood, sweat, and tears to create the system that we want, rather than endlessly talking about it's the capstone, the eye of the pyramid. Once we find out who that is, everything will be solved. No, I don't think that'll solve anything. I'd like to throw that out there. I cannot answer that question, but the real question is, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about the corruption that exists? Because if the answer is just to get rid of the people at the top and repopulate that position of power, I think we're going about this the wrong way.
Well said, my friend. I agree with you. Competing factions, it's like, you know, mafia crime families. I think the intelligence agencies.
Everyone has dirt on someone else. I think that's probably the way it functions.
Intelligence agencies are just the enforcement arms for these cliques. And if, I don't know if you ever looked at King Cora's Boys Home, but the UK government, MI5, MI6, they justified the, you know, they took these kids and these horrible things and had them with going with politicians and prominent people because they were had these peace negotiations going violent. So they justified the sacrificing of the kids in the interest of national security. And they take them from care homes because there's no parents, blah, blah, blah. So that, you know, that they can eat more easily, get away with it like that. It's really sad.
It's the most disgusting, despicable thing that you can possibly imagine. And I don't know. Again, the question is, what do we do about it? And if we're just going to try to put better people in positions of power, I think that's going to fail every time because humans are humans and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
And human nature seems to be immutable, so we just go round and round with these monsters. All right, so next question then from Goldie. Why does the CIA have so much power? Are they not self-invented? They are gangsters at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They are self-invented and they are gangsters, yes. And for people who, you know, really go into the history of the creation of the National Security State and National Security Act of 1947 and how the CIA was actually founded and who was founding it, including, of course, a lot of people from Skull and Bones and Yale, but also, I mean, a lot of them were Wall Street lawyers. That's literally, you know, Dulles and many others were in that clique, in that particular stew. And yes, they essentially invented themselves as, okay, now we're going to create this agency and we're going to get, you know, the president to sign over these powers to us. And then we're going to start using that power to essentially do what we want. And it was something that I only discovered a few years ago. I had never heard this before, but it was Eisenhower. Was it Eisenhower or Truman? Oh my God, I better nail this down. I do have actually the article that he wrote in December of 1963 in, I think that was the Washington Post published it, in which former president Truman, question mark, no, Eisenhower, it must have been, anyway, was literally writing about, you know, why the CIA must be disbanded because it wasn't supposed to do this. It's become out of control. And he was writing that 1 month after JFK got his head blown off. So, you know, I mean, I think even, again, people think the president controls everything and makes all, no. And even the president started to realize that certainly after the coup in Dallas in 63. Yeah, no, you don't run the show anymore. This oligarchy, this new oligarchy has self-invented. Again, that makes it sound like it didn't exist before, but it just formalized itself in the CIA in the 1940s. And by 1963, they had assumed control of the U.S. government outright.
So what do you think of the role of the bars in the rise of Jeffrey Epstein and this book, Space Relations?
Yeah, I still haven't read the book. I don't want to, but I know I will have to at some point. Have you read it?
No, I've not, but I've looked at little summaries of it and reviews of it.
It just sounds so disgusting. I don't want to subject myself to it. But yeah, I'm going to have to at some point. So for people who don't know what we're talking about, obviously Trump's attorney general in his first term was Bill Barr, who was the one who presided over the arrest of Epstein, his incarceration. And he definitely killed himself in jail, guys. Case closed. And Bill Barr's father, Donald Barr, just happened to be the headmaster of an elite private school in New York called the Dalton School. It was called Dalton School, right? Which was part of the Ivy Preparatory School League. And definitely, a high class prep school that was teaching the up and coming elitists of the American upper class. And in 1974, in the summer of 1974, Epstein got hired to teach in the fall of 1974 at the Dalton School, despite having really no credentials to do so. He was not a teacher by profession. He didn't have any credentials to do so, but he was hired as a teacher. And I don't know if you've seen the final documentation on this. As far as I know, it certainly hasn't been proven, as far as I know, that Donald Barr hired Epstein, but he did seem to be, he was the headmaster at the point where Epstein was coming in the door. And by the time Epstein started teaching, Donald Barr had left. But anyway, for people who don't know, yes, Donald Barr, the father of Bill Barr, the Trump attorney general who presided over the Epstein cover-up, wrote this bizarre science fiction novel, Space Relations, about intergalactic sex slaves, including minors that were being sold and tortured and subjected to various things in outer space. And it sounds so ridiculous, but unfortunately seems to be true. I've even linked to it in my most recent episode. If people want to go and read it, it's up there online. You can go read it. I'm going to have to do it at some point, unfortunately.
I was about to speak to Hoppenberg before he died. Did you get to speak to him? Tower Financial? You know, Jeffrey Epstein's partner in Tower Financial, the guy who went to prison for it, and Jeffrey got passed. Right.
Yeah. No, I definitely did not get to speak to him, though.
How come the only person arrested for all these crimes is a female, Maxwell?
Again, great question. Well, no. Okay. I mean, Epstein was arrested, so I guess we can say that. yeah. But, I mean, who else are we going to arrest at this point? Again, without actually the documentation that we know does exist. I mean, we know that they had those binders of CDs with the name plus name, redacted name plus redacted name on them, etc. If there's blackmail material, that was it. So we know it exists, but it's all part of some ongoing investigation, which means they can keep it under cover of national security or classification or whatever they want. Until the end of time, apparently. So again, until we have that evidence, who are we going to prosecute? I mean, we should be prosecuting people like, say, Prince Andrew and many others, but are we going to get it? Are we going to get Bill Clinton? Well, we'll find out what he, you know, testifies next month, right?
So we've got about 10 minutes left, viewers, if you want to get your final questions in for James. And please subscribe to his channel. I'll put the link in the live chat again. If you're watching on replay, the link is in the description box, as are the links for all of James's socials. Murph wants to know about Camp Zorro, New Mexican property, what was going on there. I mean, we have interviewed a few survivors who've suggested baby farming, cloning, all kinds of diabolical things.
Yeah, this is another, I mean, again, let's add it to the list: blackmail and intelligence gathering and financial operations. And oh yeah, some sort of weird eugenics cloning, whatever the hell Epstein was involved in. For people who don't know that side of the story, I did write an editorial about it about a year ago. I should probably dig that back up and repost it because I think a lot of people didn't see it. But yeah, Epstein was obsessed with eugenics, was connected to a lot of people that are in the modern eugenics movement, George Church and others, funding their work as people, you know, as I think is now part of the common knowledge of the Epstein case. Epstein was involved with a lot of scientists, and yes, specifically scientists that were involved in this kind of genetic research and things like this. So, and he had talked about wanting to have many children to, you know, pass on his genes. And so baby farming, cloning, whatever was going on there. Again, yeah, fascinating stuff, but very few people have been on that particular side of the story.
All right, Louise wants to know, hi, James, do you think Maxwell was infatuated and just wanted to please Epstein? She had a privileged upbringing and threw it all away just to please him, it seems.
Yeah. Who is Ghislaine? What was her, you know, what was her motivation in all of this? Again, a valid question. It certainly seems that her father had been a domineering presence over her, and that he had essentially mapped out, you know, her life and her relations and was trying to set her up with Kennedys or whoever he could, you know, in order to essentially propagate the family business, the intelligence gathering, whatever they were trying to do. And she took that task to heart. Why did she take that task to heart? Why did she ultimately latch onto Epstein? What, you know, did she have something on Epstein? Did Epstein have something on her? Was what kind of sick game were they playing? It seems from everything that I've read of various survivor accounts, etc., that absolutely Ghislaine in some ways was even more of a predator who actually enjoyed the sort of the capturing and enslaving of these girls, etc. So there's no doubt she's sadistic, psychopathic material herself. But yeah, what kind of relationship specifically did she have with Epstein? Why Epstein in particular? Like, what made Epstein stand out to these people? Like, my sense is that the intelligence side of it and everything more comes from the Maxwell clan than from Epstein himself, who seems to have appeared kind of out of nowhere and been scooped up and clearly, you know, brought along for this career and built up into who he was. But why Epstein, I think, is actually the more fascinating part of it. Maxwell just seems to me part of that intelligence stew that she obviously grew up in. But Epstein seems to be the question of, you know, where did he come from? How did he get his foot in that door at the Dalton School and then up the chain?
Yeah, Louise, if you want to research more on that, we did about a 2-hour interview with John Sweeney about the psychodynamics of the Maxwell family. And on the intelligence side of it, we've done a part 2 recently with Ari Ben-Menashe, former Israeli military intelligence, talks about Galen meeting Jeffrey way before the mainstream media purported and was brought into the Nexus by her father. So it was all one big spy network. All right, so Simon's asking about Bill Gates and Jeffrey and eugenics.
Well, yeah. So for people who are interested, I did a big deep dive on Bill Gates. Who is Bill Gates? CorbettReport.com/Gates, in which I make the case that, yes, Gates is some form of eugenicist. And he does have the Epstein relationship, obviously, which, you know, even Melinda cited as part of the reason for their divorce, etc. Again, make of that what you will. But clearly, Gates is interested in eugenics, and he was tied up with Epstein. And what was his scientific advisor to, you know, his foundation or whatever it was that ended up being the executor of Epstein's estate and all of that bizarreness? Again, I don't have the definitive answer to you, but, you know, is there some relation there that goes beyond simply whatever, you know, dirt that Epstein was trying to get on Gates, which he presumably did? But beyond that, you know, was there a relationship about eugenics goals? I would certainly say that where there's smoke, there's fire. And so I'm assuming there's something going on there.
So Marie wants to know your thoughts on the picture of Clinton in the red dress.
Blue dress, isn't it?
Blue dress. Yes, Marie. Blue dress.
Yeah. Again, I mean, clearly, such bizarre stuff that you would think, I mean, imagine you are Clinton and you are visiting Epstein and that's hanging up, you know, when you're there, and it's played off as some kind of joke or something, but it's clearly intended to be something, you know, more than that, something menacing. There's something deeply upsetting about that. But anyway, there's something deeply upsetting about all of this. Anyway, yeah, who knows? I'm sure Epstein was, you know, here's one thing. We tend to think of these people as, you know, these Machiavellian schemers who have everything in control, but there are enough people who have met Epstein who think he was a total, just a absolute dirtbag prig that you would not want to associate with, and was just exuding this disgusting, you know, juvenile sort of behavior. He might have actually just thought that sort of thing was funny, but I think there may be some, you know, there's some degradation that is a part of that that clearly signals, again, who is the one that's really in power. Just because you're in the Oval Office, you think you're in power? No, look at what I've got on you.
Do you think Leslie Wexner should be being questioned about Epstein?
1,000%. Again, why? Yeah. Why is the Wexner name almost never raised in connection with Epstein, when clearly Epstein was the executor for Wexner? That was the financial empire that he was clearly a part of and was clearly, you know, working for, literally. Why does Wexner get a pass on any of this? It's mind-boggling. And again, when you start really drilling into it, again, Whitney talks about that in her book. We talked about it in the conversation, and the demons that Wexner is possessed by and all that crazy, crazy stuff that he talks about. Again, this isn't conspiracy theorizing, guys. No, he talks about it. Again, this goes so much deeper. But yeah, Wexner is, in some ways, maybe even, I won't even say that, but if people are interested in Epstein, they should be interested in Wexner.
Do you think the survivors in the end will make the list? Client list.
Yeah. So you mean like the victims obviously could create a list, as in these were the people that were abusing me. Yes. I mean, exactly right. This is the real, I mean, if there is to be any justice from this, it will come from when we start actually paying attention to the victims and actually taking their story seriously, actually asking them and actually getting the people that they implicate in this in court. And, you know, Dershowitz and others will, I'm sure, stand up to defend all of the accused. But at the very least, we should be listening to the accusers in this case.
Right? Let's put these two guys at the top of that list, folks. James, you've been an absolute gentleman. Thank you for coming on and answering all of these questions. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
As I say, there's so much to go through with all of this. And I have cited, I mean, for example, I did that recent podcast on Donald and Jeffrey's Wonderful Secret. And I had that political pedophilia episode from over a decade ago where I talked about not just Epstein, but hey, remember Jimmy Savile? Have we forgotten about that? And, you know, everything else besides all the stuff that was going on in Belgium and et cetera, all of these crazy political pedophile rings. So that all exists out there. There's a lot more. As I say, I wrote an editorial, I think about a year ago, on Epstein and eugenics and that whole story. But if people, again, if people want the deep dive, if you want to, you know, dip your toe in the deep dive, you can go and watch my recent interview, or not recent, recently reposted interview with Whitney Webb. But if you want the real thing, I'd say, you know, read One Nation Under Blackmail. She's got 900 pages of information on this that, and thousands of footnotes that branch off into all these areas. So there's a lot more for people who are interested in digging into this.
Yeah, I've written a book about Savile as well. So if you ever want me on your show to talk about him, I've got a lot to say on him. Yeah. But thank you for coming on, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. And I'm going to close the show and let you go. Cheers.
All right. Thanks, thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. So what a phenomenal guest, folks. Absolutely brilliant. And thank you for all of your questions. This day is not done. We have got the Manhattan Madam exposing Epstein at 7 p.m. And then we have got Inside Charlie Kirk's Death, a conversation with Myron Gaines. We'll probably hit him up with some Epstein questions as well at 9 p.m. UK. So we've got a day of heavy hitters, folks, thanks to guest booker Shane, who was very active in the chat there. Thank you for organizing this day, Shane. Hope to see some of you in the next one.